Recording in progress.
Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I'm very happy to be with all of you at the Govardhan School of Yoga. I think it's almost a year perhaps since I've had the opportunity to be with all of you. I do hope that you're all keeping well, and both physically as well as spiritually. I believe there are a series of such seminars or talks that have been organized. And the topic I was asked to speak on today is the wealth of good health. Of course, we all understand the importance of good health. It's only the bitterness of disease that makes us understand the sweetness of health. It is only in the absence of good health that the importance of good health comes to the forefront of our mind. Without good health, nothing really is relishable. And in this day, when we are hopefully at the very end of the COVID pandemic, this topic is especially important. We find that no matter how advanced our medical technology and science has been, there still has been an enormously large number of deaths that have happened, unfortunately. And what to speak of many others who were hospitalized and who had to undergo traumatic experiences, perhaps in the intensive care unit and so on. So more than ever before, I believe that it is time for us to put preventive health care on not the back burner, but right on the front burner, to keep it right in front of our sight, so that we understand how important it is. That is not to say that therapeutic care or curative care is not important, but especially so with preventive health care. We've all heard the saying or the proverb, an ounce of precaution prevention is worth a pound of cure. Or even simply put, that prevention is better than cure. So the traditional health sciences across the world, actually, what to speak of Ayurveda in the Vedic tradition, has emphasized especially on prevention. Whilst sciences like Ayurveda, yoga, and so on have also a lot to offer in terms of curative healthcare, that is therapy and treatment, but they especially focus on prevention as a very important aspect of holistic living, of happy living. We have so many proverbs in the English language that deal with prevention. For example, an apple a day keeps a doctor away, and so on. So therefore, I would like to focus especially in this talk on preventive health care and leading on to related topics. Of course, because health is so important for us, and nothing else really matters when we are terribly sick, it's not hard to understand why health is wealth. In fact, we could go further and say health is better than wealth. Because when we do not have health, then we lose the zest for living. We lose our happiness. When there is disease or bad health, there is pain, there is suffering, there is a loss of productivity, loss of effectiveness. We can't do the things we want to do. We can't do them in the way that we want to do it, to the degree that we want to do it. Our life gets circumscribed by so many restrictions and regulations. And bad health also makes bad financial sense. We have to spend so much of our money on medicines, on therapies, and so on. It increases our anxiety, it increases our stress levels, and also it makes us increasingly self-centered. We become more and more preoccupied with our problem, and we become sometimes obsessed with it, to the degree that we lose our focus on other important things in life as well. So therefore, it makes sound sense for us to really focus on healthcare as an important dimension, as one of the very, very important dimensions of our life. However, it needs to be said here that when we speak of health, we speak of something much more than just the obvious. By the obvious, I mean our physical bodily health. That, of course, is something that we all understand and appreciate. The physical body must be healthy, but that's not all when it comes to health. There is much more to health than the health of the body. There is mental health. Mental health is a very vast field in itself. It encompasses a whole area, a whole range of problems and states of being, shall we say. We generally recognize mental health again in its absence, or when it is deficient or defective in some way. When we see people with mental health problems, or if we ourselves happen to be afflicted with something like that, then it comes to the forefront. So whether it is personality disorders like schizophrenia, or whether it is depression, whether it is anxiety and stress, or various other panic attacks, and so many other psychological problems, paranoia and psychosis and so on and so forth. And then we specifically have problems that are related to emotional well-being. For example, people have a deep sense of loneliness sometimes, a sense of being abandoned and not having anyone to be with them, a sense of feeling unloved, which creates a vacuum in their life. Or you have people who may be subject to fits of violence or anger. And in other ways, we may have an upswell of negative emotions in our heart, like hatred towards somebody, or jealousy, or lust, or greed, or maybe ego. So all these negative things, they sometimes create so many problems for us. They create instability for us mentally, emotionally, and that manifests behaviorally as well. So, at least if there's somebody who has a physical ailment, it's easier to handle it. But when somebody has a mental ailment, it's much harder to deal with. And especially if there are emotional imbalances or personality peculiarities, shall we say, or very major eccentricities, then that creates a lot of difficulty for that person as well as for others around. So this is a very important dimension of health. And more the world is beginning to recognize that. As time passes, we witness a rising number of cases of mental health patients. It's not something that is rare. Mental health has always been an issue in human history. It's not something new. However, it would not be an exaggeration to say that the kind of lifestyle that we have today, the kind of atmosphere in which we live today, and despite, or shall we say, because of the so-called advancement that we have made in life, we have so many people who are feeling, shall we say, hollow and empty. And we see an enormous rise in the number and nature of dysfunctional relationships, whether it is marriages breaking down, whether it is friendships breaking down, you know, and so on and so forth. So the physical and mental and emotional health is something that is in a crisis in the modern day and age, especially. So we need to pay attention. But then again, in as much as complete health is not merely a matter of just physical health, but also mental and emotional health, similarly, health encompasses much more than just physical, mental, and emotional health. Fundamentally, most importantly, there is also the idea of spiritual health, which the World Health Organization has recognized and has included in its definition of health. But still, there needs to be more clarity on what exactly this spiritual health means. Now, because there are several topics to be discussed today, I will not be able to discuss all of these three things in detail. So I'll have to talk briefly about everything because we have a limited time, and then we'll have a little discussion at the end of the talk. But in summary, let us try to speak about spiritual health. Spiritual health, first of all, denotes a state of consciousness in which one is at peace with oneself, peace with the world, and at peace with one's origin. So what does it mean? One cannot be at peace with oneself unless one knows who one is. One cannot be at peace with the world unless one understands the real nature of the world. And one cannot understand these things unless one also understands where both the self and the world have come from, the origin of both of them. So one must be in harmony with not just the physical world outside, but one's own spiritual self and the source of both the world and the self. Now, that means that essentially, to be spiritually healthy, we must understand the true nature of our spiritual identity. And the Bhagavad Gita speaks about us as spirit souls, as the Atma, spiritual sparks of energy. Lord Krishna refers to us, the spirit souls, as tiny sparks of spiritual energy. So understanding our spiritual identity as spirit souls is a beginning, but it is not enough. Further, we have to go and try to understand what the nature of this world is, and also the origin, which is Lord Krishna, according to Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the most important spiritual texts from the Vedic, the ancient Indian tradition. So we also need to understand, therefore, what is that spiritual reality beyond matter. We need to have a clear understanding about the philosophy of spiritual existence from texts like the Bhagavad Gita. However, it is not merely a theoretical understanding that constitutes spiritual health. It's a beginning, undoubtedly. But that has to be put into practice. Therefore, spiritual health really means the existence and the cultivation of certain divine qualities like devotion to God or kindness upon all living entities, qualities like forgiveness, simplicity, austerity, and so on. It also implies a deep faith in the teachings of the Shastras, of the Vedic literatures like the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, the Puranas, and especially texts like the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when we have that deep faith, and when we follow a certain lifestyle that facilitates the development of such qualities, we automatically begin to experience a freedom from the negativities that we discussed earlier. It is a natural consequence of being in this world that we develop these negativities. However, by accepting those rules and regulations that facilitate development of spiritual health, we are able to overcome this. So therefore, living in accordance with spiritual principles and teachings enables us to move towards better and better conditions of spiritual health. So this is in brief, and I will now start discussing briefly what we can do about this. What kind of lifestyle facilitates or helps us to develop a holistic approach towards health, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual? So one can loosely call it the Vedic lifestyle, a simple Vedic lifestyle. Now, Vedic, as the word implies, is connected to the Vedas, the ancient Sanskrit texts. The Vedas are not ordinary books. They're not books that have been devised by any ordinary human being. There are certain literatures that are indeed compiled by certain by certain sages and certain very spiritually evolved personalities, but those teachings must necessarily be in conformity with the original Vedic teachings. If that is so, then these other texts can also be considered part of the larger body of Vedic literature. So lifestyles that are in accordance with that is essentially what we can call a simple Vedic lifestyle. Now, a Vedic lifestyle is not merely about our lifestyle in the sense of what we do, how we do, what we eat. All of these things are very important. But fundamentally, underlying all of this is a philosophy of life, is a belief system, is our values, our attitudes. And according to those beliefs and values and attitudes, what is it that we do in life? Why do we do them? And what is it that we don't do? So, it is not merely a question of our external activities. There is a lot of the internal world, not only of our mind, but also of our Vedic teachings that go behind us adopting this kind of a lifestyle. So the word yoga, since you're all students of the Govardhan School of Yoga, and you've already gone through many such seminars and courses earlier, perhaps many of you have undergone extensive courses in the Govardhan Eco Village. So you're all familiar that the word yoga implies linking, but it is not linking to anything mundane or material. It's not a question of linking to anything of this world. The word yoga implies linking to something that is transcendental, that is spiritual, that is beyond matter. So therefore, let's try to look at what exactly this is. Now, the fact that such a Vedic lifestyle has sustained over millennia indicates that there must be a lot that is right with it. Otherwise, how could it have sustained? And why has it sustained? Because it is in harmony with existence, with creation. It is only when something is in harmony that sustainability is possible. Nowadays, we are speaking a lot about sustainability in economics, in every discipline of knowledge. The word sustainability is gaining importance. We talk of sustainable economics, sustainable development, sustainable living, and so on. So sustainability hinges upon the word harmony. Unless we are in tune, or to use a modern phrase, we are on the same page or on the same wavelength with the purpose of creation as enunciated in the Vedic texts, it is not possible for anything to be sustainable. So the Vedic literature especially is something that is eternally existing. Vedic knowledge is not like ordinary knowledge that is created at some point in time and then keeps getting modified as time goes by and sometimes is proved wrong. Vedic knowledge is eternal. In the Vedas themselves, an understanding is given of the eternal and transcendental and irrefutable an infallible nature of this Vedic knowledge. So it comes from the breathing of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is Krishna as given in Bhagavad Gita, and he also has a form that is known as Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan. So this material world, according to Bhagavad Gita, is created and then sustained for a while and then is destroyed. And this continues in a cycle, repeatedly. It has been happening from time immemorial and it will continue into time eternity in the future. So every time there is a disruption in the creation of the material world, there are various types of destructions. There is a complete destruction, there is a partial destruction, there are levels of partial destructions. And every time there is a destruction, whether partial or full, there is a need after that destruction, when the next creation or sub-creation begins, to reintroduce that Vedic teaching so that humanity at large may have some path forward about how to live in harmony with the world around. So these Vedic teachings, which have originated from the breathing of Lord Narayan, they are introduced into the universe for the benefit of humanity through a certain instrumentality, through a certain process, through a certain network or succession of great saintly people. And then that Vedic knowledge is passed down in this disciplic succession. So, because our needs are multifarious, multidimensional, at multi-levels, they're of different kinds, therefore one kind of book does not suffice to cover every aspect of our life. So the Bhagavad Gita is foundational, for example, because it gives us certain very fundamental truths about spiritual life, but it gives us very little in detail when it comes to the health of the body, and so on. So therefore we need a whole range of texts, and the Vedas, the house of the Vedas, so to speak, provides us with that. Therefore not only do we have the four Vedas, we have the Upanishads, which are highly philosophical texts, we have histories like the Puranas and the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and so on. We also have the Ayurveda texts like the Charaka Samhita, which were made by great saintly doctors of those era, of the earlier ages, which teach us how to live a good, healthy life on the material platform, on the platform of goodness, and gradually to enable us to come to the spiritual platform. Incidentally, Today happens to be the day on which the father or the originator of Ayurveda appeared. His name is Dhanvantari, and he is an incarnation of Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan. So it's a coincidence. I don't know whether the school of yoga planned this lecture deliberately to coincide with this day or whether it's a coincidence, but anyway, it is an important day for health. There are texts like the Ayurvedic scriptures, Charaka Samhita, Sushruta Samhita, Vagbhattas, Ashtanga Hridayam, many books like that. And then also there are additional books like the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, for example. So when one looks at all these texts, one can understand that one has a whole range of books available to guide us for perfect health, physically, mentally, emotionally, and above all, spiritually. So when it comes to a good health, since we have given a broad and deep definition of health as encompassing the body, mind, intelligence, soul, etc., so naturally the lifestyle that we need to adopt to be healthy completely must cater to these things. So there is one proverb in Sanskrit that could be useful for us as a beginning point. Sukham shete satyavakta, sukham shete mitavyayi, hitabhuk mitabhuk chaiva tathaiva vijitendriyaha. Now I'll translate this for you. This is a Sanskrit shloka. It speaks about who can sleep peacefully or happily. Shete refers to one who is sleeping. Sukham means in happiness. Now, sleeping with happiness is something that is rare. And especially these days, there are so many problems of insomnia and disturbed sleep and so on. So, having peaceful sleep is very important for good health. And we often hear people saying, well, I've done this now, I've done what my conscience is, permitted me to do. Now I can sleep peacefully at night because I've done the right thing, right? So sleeping peacefully at night is often an indication not just of a physical state of mind but also a mental state situation. So this particular proverb says, Sukham shete satyavakta. So one who speaks the truth can sleep peacefully at night. Sukham shete mitavyayi. Mita means limited. Vyayi means one who speaks. So, one who speaks limitedly, who doesn't excessively talk, who's not very garrulous, such a person can also speak, can sleep peacefully at night. A very talkative person cannot sleep peacefully, cannot do anything peacefully, because it indicates a very restless mind which induces that person to go on and on and on and on speaking. And then, hita bhuk mita bhuk cha eva. Hita means for the benefit and bhuk means to eat. So hita bhuk means one who eats beneficial foods. Foods, in other words, that are nutritious, that are nourishing, that are good for us. And mita bhuk. Mita again is limited. So not only should you eat nourishing and nutritious food, but you should eat it in limited quantity. Then you can sleep peacefully. You can have a good night's sleep. And also, tatha eva vijitendriyaha. And one must have conquered the mind and the senses. So when the mind and senses are conquered, then it is easy for us to sleep peacefully at night. Devoid of that, it becomes very difficult. So let's try to speak a few words about this. Now, speaking the truth, of course, is very important. In our daily life, we do have many reasons to lie, and it's very easy to lie. But still, we are exhorted to speak the truth nevertheless. And it makes life easier because we don't have to remember all our lies, everything that we've spoken at different times. So especially when it comes to ordinary things, small dealings, one sees that in life, that sometimes people just lie needlessly for little things. There is no need really to lie, but it's just a kind of a habit. And they lie. It just becomes a casual thing. So therefore, we must cultivate the habit of being truthful. The larger definition of being truthful also is that one has to be in harmony with the absolute truth, the supreme truth, Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. Now, as far as speaking in regulation, or rather mitavyayi, between speaking less, not speaking too much, I beg your pardon, vyayi indicates spending, not speaking. Vyaya, to actually spend. So, not only should one be truthful in speaking, but one should also be very frugal when it comes to expenditure. Nowadays, we are living in an age which is a consumerist age, where consumption of goods is considered a standard for advancement or happiness or success. So everybody is telling us, the economists and the political leaders are telling us, that you spend more, buy more, so that the economy will get a lift. And then when there is a demand, and then there is a supply there, so when there is a demand, then automatically there's more money that comes into circulation, and then everybody becomes prosperous. So the idea, the philosophy underlying this is that you should just accumulate more and more, spend more and more, and enjoy life. But factually, that is not the case. Real happiness, real contentment, and even real health does not come by splurging our money unrestrictedly on all kinds of clothes and gadgets and different kinds of food. And wasteful expenditure is never a recipe for happiness. And this kind of an economy is not sustainable at all, because it is not in harmony. What is in harmony with the world around us is that we live simply. If everybody were to live simply, then the needs would diminish. And success will be measured in terms of not how much we consume and how much we waste, but in terms of how much we have been able to voluntarily restrict our consumption to. Simplicity also has its own joys, which cannot be experienced by one who lives in the midst of abundance. One who lives in the midst of abundance can never be satisfied, because such is the nature of the materialistic mind, that greed is unlimited. And when greed possesses the mind, then there is no satiation, there is no satisfaction at any point. And despite the fact that one may have an abundance of wealth and other material assets, one then begins to envy others who also have a lot. It leads to an unnecessary competitive and harsh spirit. So therefore, the idea is to bring down this fever of wanting to just consume more and more and more. If everybody's needs are reduced, then the economy will become so much simpler, the economic problems will reduce. But because everybody around us is urging us to become rich and become prosperous, and that's the way to happiness, so everybody is promising us that. I was reading some months ago some quip. Somebody said that the first law of economics is that there aren't enough resources for everybody in the world. And the first law of politics is to deny the first law of economics, which means that the politicians, and nowadays even the economists, will actually tell you that just go and enjoy life, just increase your spending, just spend and buy. So what is happening is we are not only creating an artificial economy which will burst one day like a balloon, but we're also engendering a mindset in the population at large that this is what success and happiness is. And therefore nature reacts in different ways, because this leads us to kind of artificial living, and therefore disease, physical disease, mental disease, etc., comes as a natural consequence of all of that. So just before I came on some time ago, I was doing a little bit of internet research to find some nice quotes. So there was one nice quote that I found from somebody on the internet, and he says, "We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like." So this is typically the mindset of many, many people in the world today. This is the essence of the materialistic psyche, of the consumerist philosophy. So actually, this leads us to borrow. We buy things we don't really need. So the whole advertising industry is geared to making us buy things we don't need. And because we don't have enough money, and we look at everybody around us, and from childhood, this spirit is inculcated in us. That look, this person has so much, that child has so much, so I should also have that. And when we grow up to be adults, our whole philosophy of life is geared towards that, to just accumulate more and more, by hook or by crook. And when we don't have enough money to buy something, then what do? We borrow. We borrow money, and we spend our whole life repaying that borrowing or that loan, the mortgage. So the modern world is a world of mortgages, of loans, of debts. And there's never a moment's peace, especially for one who's straightforward. For a person who's crooked, he may take a loan and then not pay back and disappear or something. And there's quite a few of that tribe as well in this world. However, for the ordinary law-abiding person, you know, we see that debts, are a common thing of life. So mental peace is not possible when, we are constantly under debt. In India, we see many farmers over the last several years have committed suicide because they've been so burdened with debt. Because it's an artificial lifestyle. We're not living in harmony. Agriculture has to be done in a certain way. But when we do not do that because of various factors, then we resort to so many unharmonious ways of doing things that leads to debt. We want to live beyond our means. So this is a problem. So therefore, sukhe shete mitavyayi, one who spends limitedly, frugally. It doesn't mean one is miserly, but one lives frugally, one limits one's needs. Hitabhuk mitabhuk refers to food. Yes? And that one must eat the right kind of food, and I'll come to food in a few minutes. And also vijitendriya, that one must... Who's projecting all these things here on the screen? Whoever is dealing with the screens, could you please... Somebody is... Can somebody please look into this? How come the screen is changing with all these other things here? So whoever is overseeing this, please check. Somebody is doing things he shouldn't be doing. Someone who's here should just be listening, but he's doing other things. So please look into that. So in any case, the control of the mind and senses is also very, very important. Because without that, we just desire more and more and more. We are never satisfied. So anyway, with this kind of a background and overview, let me come to life of simple living and high thinking and begin with the subject of food. Now, food is so important for us, we can't do without it, we can't live without it. In Ayurveda, it is said that food is medicine. Hippocrates, the Greek philosopher, also said at some point, why is this happening here on the screen? Who is? Whoever is in charge of it, can you please ensure that this doesn't happen? This is the third or fourth time it's happening. Yes? So, okay, fine. So, Hippocrates, the Greek philosopher of many years ago, also said the same thing, that food is medicine. Actually, if you do not know how to eat your food, if you do not know what kind of food to eat and so on, then there is no question of good health. If you do not eat, because food is medicine, we have to know how to use that medicine. If we use food like medicine, then everything will be fine. If we do not use food like medicine, we will end up using medicine like food. This is an important point. Also, it's important to know that we have to know our food. If we don't know our food, then we will need so many medicines. But there is a saying that if you don't know your food, or rather if you know your food, there is no need for medicines because you will be healthy. And if you don't know your food, there will still be no need for medicines because there is no point in having medicines. Because no matter what medicines you take, if you aren't eating right, then medicines are not going to work. So therefore, this little very wise saying, that if you know your food, there is no need for medicines. If you don't know your food, there is still no point in having medicines. So therefore, knowing food is very important. And Ayurveda says that all good health begins with good diet and good digestion. Actually, it is important to know that food is not what we eat. Now, you may be surprised to hear this. Food is not what we eat. Food is what we digest. Because the food has to be digested, then it has to be assimilated into the system, and then it is transformed in so many different ways to develop the body and keep it healthy. When the food is not digested properly, then what remains behind is toxin. It's called ama. And this digestive toxin actually then is a root of all disease in Ayurveda. So therefore, working on what is food and what is digestion is very important. Not only is it important to know what to eat, but we have to know how to eat, how much to eat, when to eat. We also have to know how to cook, how to mix foods, etc. So, it's a whole science. And I must offer a disclaimer here that I am not a doctor. But from whatever I have understood of holistic life, this is indeed important. A lot depends on how we eat. So if one eats food according to these principles, then actually food becomes nectar, which means it actually nourishes the body, it makes it full of life and vigor, and one can actually have the zest for living when there is good food and then consequently good health. Now, this idea that food is nectar or amrit can be taken one step truly forward to give a more complete understanding of this statement that food is nectar, And that happens when we take Ayurvedically prepared or food to the spiritual level. Then we offer this food to Lord Krishna, as he has described in the Bhagavad Gita. When such food, that is in the mode of goodness, is offered to Lord Krishna with devotion, then that becomes sanctified, that becomes holy, very pure, transcendentally potent. And this prasadam then surcharges us in every way. Not only does it help the body and the mind, but it also very importantly purifies us spiritually, makes us spiritually strong. So the subject of food is very vast. So I'll just give a few points here, and then we'll move on to the next point in a few minutes. So the first thing is that one must try to eat what are called sattvic foods, foods in the mode of goodness, essentially grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, nuts, and so on, and in moderation, of course.
Recording in progress.
Mitabhuk. Yes, we just heard that verse. Next is that the spicing must also be sattvic. Generally, spices are used to make the food therapeutic, to impart the food flavor and aroma. So when there is a pleasant aroma in the food, then one's taste buds are kind of activated, one feels increased appetite, one eats with relish, and it is easier to digest as well. So the sattvic spicing will keep us healthy in every respect. Another point is that one should not eat late at night, because that causes indigestion and that causes so many other problems. And because indigestion is the root of many diseases, of all disease, therefore eating late at night and also similar other bad habits have to be given up. We should not overeat. We should not eat when we are angry or when we are stressed, because all of this leads to the buildup of toxins and indigestion. And having occasional fasts is important. For those who are spiritual practitioners, this happens naturally, because we follow days like the Ekadashi, which comes twice in a month, where we perform some austerities, we fast from grains and beans. There are others who fast, fast from even grains and beans and take only water perhaps. Some don't even take that. But at least we should fast from grains and beans on Ekadashi. So it's apart from being spiritually very, very helpful, it also helps us cleanse the body of toxins physically as well. There are other festivals also on which we fast. So partial fasting or occasional fasting is helpful. Another point I want to mention is that one should try to eat pure foods, devoid of all sorts of artificial chemicals, for preservatives, coloring agents, or other chemicals added to impart some special taste to it. We should try to avoid genetically modified foods. We should try to get as far as possible foods that are organic and that are pure, that have been made without any chemical fertilizers or pesticides and so on. Also, it is better to avoid processed foods, canned foods, and stored foods, because these are stored for weeks, if not months. And then we eat it after that. And for storing it, they use so many sorts of, so many chemicals and so on. So it's very bad for health. In fact, the modern civilization actually depends a lot on such processed foods. Many people all across the world practically subsist on such processed canned foods. They buy large quantities of food for weeks together, and they store them in their freezer. It's already been in the freezer in the shopping mall, and then they take it up and just put it in the microwave oven and they heat it, and that's very, very bad for health. Actually, it's better to actually eat freshly prepared food at home, to cook food, hot food, that is much healthier, and it's much more conducive to family bonding, or even if you have your friends over, your guests over, it's just so much more, shall we say, amenable for good social bonding. Also, an important point is that one can try to eat food that is locally available rather than buying foods that are produced halfway across the globe, and also try to eat foods that are grown in that particular season. So whatever season we are in now, we should try to eat foods, the vegetables, fruits that grow in this particular season. It's also important to understand what kinds of food work for us. Something may be very delicious, but if it doesn't work for us, then we should know how much to limit it to. And it may be an unpopular thing to say, but eating too much of raw food is also not considered very good for health, because even though raw foods may be nutritious in and of themselves, but now because they're covered with all sorts of pesticides and chemicals, you have to really wash them properly before you eat it. And apart from that, also they're harder to digest. So some degree of raw food is okay, but the same vegetables when eaten, when they're lightly cooked, gently cooked, is much better for health. So we get the substantial nutrition from the vegetables and fruit of vegetables, but without the problems associated with that. And very importantly, the last point that I want to mention here is that we have to eat as a meditation. As I mentioned earlier, we should try to eat transcendentally charged food, prasadam, spiritually sanctified food. And when we take that prasadam, we say it honoring the prasadam, because we are dealing with it with respect, because you know this food has now become spiritualized by the mercy of Lord Krishna. So therefore we take that prasadam with that understanding, with that mood, with that attitude. So therefore, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, then eating can be a very healthy exercise. And I'll quickly say a few words about the daily routine. It is very important to rise early in the morning. And by early, I don't mean 8 a.m. I mean before sunrise. Devotees of Lord Krishna generally rise an hour at least before sunrise, maybe a little earlier than that as well. And then they perform spiritual practices. In order to rise early, of course, it is important for us to sleep early. Otherwise, it is going to be very difficult to rise early. And even if one does so, one will not be in a good state of mind. When one is under-rested, one feels irritable, one's consciousness is not good, it's not good for health either when we sleep lesser than what is needed. So, before we go to bed, when we are in the bed, and also when we wake up from sleep immediately, we should offer prayers. We should offer some nice verses, and if we don't know any nice verses, we can chant the names of the Lord, and we can chant some mantras. And in this way, we create a very favorable and conducive mindset. All through the day, our mind is bombarded with so many negative experiences and worldly thoughts and so on. And we have to cleanse our mind of all that. So otherwise, those things will remain in our mind and haunt us in dreams. So before we go to bed, if we offer some nice prayers for a few moments at least, if not minutes, we think about the Lord, we think about the deities of the Lord, some nice instructions or pastimes of the Lord, then we go to bed with that calming, spiritually very calming activity, and we can sleep well. And when we wake up in the morning, there is the mode of ignorance that we have to get rid of, the mode of ignorance of many hours of sleep, and then we have to prepare for the day ahead. And what better way to create auspiciousness in the new day than to think of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, chant his mantras, chant his names, yes, and then wake up. Ayurveda has recommended many, many practices that can be done right upon waking. Now, this is not the time for us to talk in detail about these practices, but I'll just mention a couple of them in the passing. One is called Kavala, which is popularly nowadays known as oil pulling, where you take sesame oil or something, some other similar oil, and you swish it in your mouth, yes, and then you go to the toilet, you attend nature's calls timely. There are also other things like putting nose drops, which is nasya, with medicated ghee or simple ghee or perhaps even sesame oil and so on. It is also helpful to rub oil on one's body. This is called Abhyanga. It's very helpful for health practice. And if you can't do it for the whole body, at least try to do it on the scalp, the ears, maybe on the soles of the feet especially. So that will help in many ways. Bathing is very important. Bathing with water that is not too hot, even if it's cold, the weather is cold, it should be lukewarm but not very hot. And then we should exercise daily, walking, do some yoga, asanas for good health. And one should also learn about the different seasons and what kinds of food and regimen we should have on a daily basis in different seasons. So time does not permit us to talk about all this. And we must try to cultivate wholesome relationships with people around us. And most importantly, on a daily basis, we should have some spiritual practices. Devotees of Lord Krishna, they chant the holy names, specifically the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, every day. And they have other such spiritual practices like hearing lectures on the Srimad Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, and reading these texts, and taking audience with the Supreme Lord in the temple and so on. So these daily practices are very important for complete holistic health. It is because of bad habits that we are unable to sometimes do all these things. The best way to overcome bad habits is to replace them with good habits. If you have a habit of sleeping late, then consciously, deliberately, with determination, we must attempt to sleep early day after day, even if we don't fall asleep at that early hour in the beginning. By keeping on doing that, the body gradually gets accustomed to sleeping early. So it is not enough to simply try to remove that bad habit artificially, but we have to replace it with a good habit. Similarly, if we have an habit of overeating, now we should try to restrict that consciously, deliberately. And above all, of course, when we develop spiritual practices, then that will help us to transcend, to go beyond our bad habits. And in the course of doing that, we may face some failures. Yes, failure is an inseparable accompaniment to life in this world. So, wherever we live, whatever we do, sometimes we are successful and sometimes we fail. So Bhagavad Gita teaches us that failure and success are two sides of the same coin, so to speak. So we should not be exhilarated in times of material success, and neither should we be unnecessarily disturbed and dejected when there is failure. So we live in a world of duality, so therefore success and failure will both be there. As long as we're doing the right thing and in the right manner, regardless of whether there is failure or success, we must continue. And if we are not doing the right thing or not doing it in the right way, then we must learn, we must correct ourselves, let failures become a stepping stone to education, let adversity become an opportunity for making advancement. So failures can be utilized in this way as learning experiences, and therefore we can actually make them stepping stones to success eventually. So we should move ahead with a very positive mindset, cultivating our spiritual and holistic lifestyle, and we will ensure that we are holistically healthy, healthy in body, healthy in mind, and healthy in spirit. So therefore we will realize the maxim that health is wealth in every respect. So I think I've just about completed the 1 hour. So maybe I overstepped by a few minutes. So thank you all very much and best wishes. I do not know if time permits a few questions. If not, no problem.
Thank you, Maharaj, for so eloquently explaining so many important concepts like spiritual health and fruitfulness and some very, very practical lifestyle tips. Maybe we can just take one or two questions. If anybody has any pressing question, then we can just Yes, Sita Mataji, you can ask your question.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Since we are following morning programs from 4:30 until 9 o'clock, how do we incorporate morning walk or exercise in our diet schedule in the morning? And otherwise, to do in the rest of the day, the exercises, it takes a last thing.
Yes, thank you for this. Yes, this is a very common question that is asked by devotees. It confronts all of us. And devotees find various ways to deal with this issue. One is to create some time between that period of 4:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. and use that maybe 20 minutes or 25 minutes to do your exercises or your yoga or your walking or something at that time. So somehow you know your timetable the best. Everyone knows his or her timetable the best. So try to incorporate it in such a way that you can do so without sacrificing your spiritual program as much as possible. And the second point is that there are certain activities for health that you can do at other times of the day also. For example, a little later on, you can go for a walk, perhaps in the evening, you know, or maybe at some other time. So in this way, you have to use your judgment to see how you can manage your 24 hours.
Okay. I thought we can go without doing exercises.
Well, it depends, as I said, if it is possible to do it at that time, it's best. If not, do it at another time.
Yeah.
Use your judgment to see how you can manage your timetable.
Anybody else? One last question. Anybody else?
So, very warm greetings on the occasion of Deepavali. Day after tomorrow is Deepavali, and then there is Govardhan Puja. Today is Dhanatrayodashi, popularly called Dhanteras. So it's a very it's a big festival period now in this month of Kartik. So warm greetings to all of you, and I hope that you're all having a wonderful month of Damodar or Kartik, and that you're offering a lamp to Lord Krishna every single day without fail, and doing some extra devotional practices every day. So thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.